Oh, that was lovely. What was that?
That was from Fleetwood Mac.
Oh, Fleetwood Mac. Oh, it's gorgeous. Honey, did you know that song? Oh, that was gorgeous. That was really pretty. And the two of you together. Oh, it was so wonderful. Thank you very much. Good morning. Welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and I'm here with a really lively message this morning. I have something to say, and I'm taking it based on some lovely writings from our founder, Ernest Holmes, who really created this philosophy we call the science of mind or religious science, that is this gorgeous way of life that gives us a way, sort of a step-by-step way to move through all of our shenanigans and attempts to have all the goodness that we feel in our hearts that we recognize and deserve. Oh, that's where the broken piece ended up. I was looking all over for that. Second pair, no problem. Oh, so by the way, isn't he dreamy? Look at him back there, just in the corner. We were talking about the dreamy poet, and I just thought you should know. Were your ears ringing? You weren't here yet. Just like, yeah, he's here, and he's, if you don't know him yet, you should meet him. He's in the corner. Really, this great hunky guy. Sorry, Rod, it's over. He's here now. So I got the title for the message based upon my reading that I've been working out of this book by Ernest Holmes called The Art of Life. And in The Art of Life, I read this passage that says this: any thought, word, or statement, any inspirational idea which helps you to rise above confusion of outward circumstances is good. It's useful for us. So I sort of paraphrase the end there because it goes on into a much longer statement. But any inspirational idea, anything we read, any thought we have that helps us to rise above the level of confusion is going to be that place where we find clarity. And so I want to speak to that today, how we can refuse to be confused. And I have a three-step at the end of the message. I'm going to give you three steps that are really easy so you have something very practical you can take home with you. And I want to look at a couple of ideas I've had as I've thought about what does that mean to refuse to be confused, and really why do we get confused. And so there were a couple of things that I thought of, and so this is the direction we're going. One way we get confused is, well, let's just face it, life. Life brings us, you know, some surprises every now and then. And so we do this work, you know, we get our spiritual stuff together, we do our personal growth, and we're moving along, and we think we're doing pretty good, and we can even, you know, we should be proud of ourselves from time to time, I'm just saying. And then we get broadsided by a little something unexpected, and we lose that sense of clarity, and we can become confused. So the first thing we'll look at is just life, the way that life does that. And the second thing, the approach that I desire to make today is this sort of something I feel passionate about and speak to from time to time. And that is the way I think we confuse ourselves by believing we're not spiritual enough. We confuse ourselves by thinking that we somehow have to sell out our physical life and not be so in love with our stuff or our beloved, but really he's so dreamy. I could just, so blessed. And I just want to say that that's okay. That these are really good examples of God-given gifts. Our ability to appreciate these things can really allow us to see there must be some way that that is a part of the spiritual path, and we don't have to confuse ourselves about it. So those are the two things we'll look at, and then I'll end with the three steps. But the first thing I did when I was looking at how I wanted to research the topic about being refusing to be confused, I looked in the concordance. Did you know we have a concordance for the Science of Mind textbook? all the practitioners, those people in studies for practitioners, are required to buy it. And I'm not even sure you use it in that first year. You'll use it a little more. But if you stick with this stuff, with this study and this deepening that it invites us to do, it becomes a very useful thing in our lives. And so instead of looking up the word confused, I decided to see what Ernest Holmes had to say about refusals. And so I looked up the word refuse, and the most fascinating thing happened. I saw a reflection of the Ernest Holmes that I recognized when I read things like the Anatomy of Prayer, the Holmes papers, and all of those studies where you can really hear his original voice. I love how clear he was. And so he makes a lot of bold statements that are really, I would say it's the way I sort of put my demand on the law. When I get really clear and I say my affirmations boldly and confidently, there's no confusion in that. I refuse to be confused. So listen, now when you look at the concordance, you get a little snippet of a sentence, and then it refers you to the page where you, in the paragraph where you can look it up. But listen to these snippets that I found under the term refuse in our concordance. Holmes says, one, refuse to talk about evil. Refuse to believe in the opposite of good. Refuse to see the negative side of life. Refuse to think about failure. And I like this one. Refuse to mentally accept anyone's condemnation. Just refuse it. And above all, he didn't say above all, but I'm throwing that in. Refuse to have your feelings hurt. Oh, Lordy, 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 if we could just not get our feelings hurt, well, the world would be so peaceful and beautiful. And we'd never have to feel like we have to defend our good honor. So I want to also throw in a disclaimer at this point, because I don't want to risk any of you going home saying, but Reverend Karen said we should refuse to see any negativity. Negative stuff happens in life. And as a matter of fact, you know, because I've said it up here, except for those people that raise their hand first visits, you're off the hook. You don't have to know. But I'm going to tell you that we stand strong in those things that we believe, and we then, with my passionate call, we don't use this information against us. So it's not about we are going to be positive thinkers, and we're going to pretend that there's no evil in the world. I really never say that, and yet I get accused of it. It's quite interesting. But listen to the way Holmes says it in this passage that I found in our textbook. He said, the time will come when, it's a sort of a disclaimer. Did I say that? I think this is kind of like a disclaimer. I like it. The time will come when we will let our conversation be in heaven, and we will refuse to talk about, read, or think about those things that ought not to be. But some will say, should we refuse to look at sickness? Should we refuse to look at poverty or unhappiness? Absolutely not. No, we will not refuse to help someone who needs help. We will not refuse to help lift up the fallen. But we will refuse to wallow there because of our own sympathies. Remember, sympathy is not empathy. Sympathy, you know, it's really seeing the worst that could happen, feeling it, believing it, and then now you're wallowing. And he concludes the statement by saying, for if the blind lead the blind, they both end up in the pit, right? We all have heard that and know that. So, let's look at these ideas. Those are great, bold statements. Those are a half a dozen bold statements of things he's saying we should refuse. And it is not to say that life is rosy if you do all these things. It's saying that there's a way we can get clearer and have less confusion in our life. And everybody wants that. I think everybody wants that. So, you know, it's baseball season. I know that because my dreamy man loves baseball, and we're watching a lot of it right now. And so I'm going to use the term curveball. So number one, my first point is, what happens when life surprises you? What happens when life throws you a curveball and you're all wound up? I'm left-handed. I know I don't know sports, but I'm left-handed. This is the way I do it, right? If I was left-handed, is that right? Yeah, I think that's right. That's right. Okay, so life throws a curveball, and you're waiting for something else. and you get a swing and a miss, or you are standing there and it was a perfect pitch and you were expecting something else, so you miss it. And we get a little, or you swing really hard and you spin yourself in a circle and it's a little dizzying. So life can be like that. I don't see the pros do that, I will confess. But life can be like that. And so I thought, well, the first thing we could look at is how do we then, in looking for that clarity that is the opposite of the confusion, how do we then find or reestablish our sense of balance? And so I did something I haven't done in a while. I looked up the Latin root derivative of the word balance, and it's something that I can't pronounce, balansum or something. And it literally means two plates. So when I thought of that, two plates, you know, the first image I got was like the circus where the guy's holding the stick, you know, and the plates, he's got the plate up there balancing, and then somebody passes him another one and you're trying to keep the two plates spinning at the same time, and life feels like that sometimes. Or juggling, you know, if you're going to stay in the circus theme. It does feel like we have a lot of balls in the air sometimes with our fast-paced lives. But that's not the plates it was referring to. With the time of the derivative of that word that said two plates, it was talking about the plates that are like on the scale. And where you look for that scale to be balanced, where you have the same weight on both plates, and that's when we get the even. Otherwise, it's lopsided, right? So we're looking for that way to find that evenness, to stabilize the path that we're walking on so that we're not feeling that sense of confusion. And if we're going to look for a way to refuse to be confused, I would say one of the first things we can do is to seek to have a balanced thought pattern. Right? I like that idea because that's not saying be careful what you say. You know, we're not looking at the superstitious side of like affirmations. But to have a balanced thought pattern means if you took all your thoughts that you had in a day and you stick them in a bag and you shook it all up and you could pour it out and see the theme right in front of you, what would it say? You know, do you think more on the dark side of life or do you think more on the positive side of life? And somewhere in between is a beautiful balance. And of course, we always pride ourselves, I like to say a lot, that if you do even a little bit of work here, you will find that you rise above the average that would be just that middle place of balance. So to be balanced in our thought patterns would be to have a stable, peaceful, respectful way that we move through life and we move through all of our situations and circumstances. So if our thought patterns are balanced, then we aren't going to be suffering from conflict and contradictions, and you certainly would not find yourself condemning other people or even situations. We're going to find a way to be more stable in all of that. Now, if you look at life in nature, in the natural world, we can observe that life itself has a way of stabilizing all things. You know, Ernest Holmes often said that, like water, for instance, will always find, it seeks its own level. And I was thinking of how the snow melts and it runs down the mountain in streams that become rivers as it meets other streams that eventually takes the water to the ocean. So it always finds its natural level. But then I was thinking about a tree, and you know, I have one of my new hobbies is I have an interest in Pinterest. Search my name on Pinterest and look at some of my boards. I'm having such a fun time on Pinterest. But on Pinterest, I created this one file for one board that has all these. I think I call it Magnificent Life. And it has all these photographs of the way life insists on being life. So I thought automatically of a tree. You know, what happens to a tree? If a tree is growing and an obstacle gets in its way, tree is just gonna grow around it. It might even become a part of that obstacle. You know, you've seen that. People put a tire, an inner tube around a tree, and what happens is it'll just absorb that and do what it needs to do anyhow. So the tree is not dissuaded, it's not discouraged, and it never gets confused. It just keeps growing. It just works around or through the obstacle. And so there's this gorgeous illustration for us about the way there is this great majestic dance of life, and there's a rhythm and a pattern, and we are sort of invited to be a part of the dance. We can learn some of the dance steps. And because I'm using music as an appropriate and dreamy sort of metaphor, I want to say that what happens with dance, what happens when you see really good dancers? Anybody else watching So You Think You Can Dance? Whoa, I like that show. Man, there is beauty. I'll tell you something that that happened for me in watching that show is I don't really like street dancing, or at least I thought I didn't like street dancing. But when I look at somebody like that, Nigel, I can't remember his name, but he's the producer of the show. He knows everything about street dancing. So they're not up there just spinning out and doing things. There's actually, you know, things that can be scored and critiqued, and there's all kinds of strange things with weird names that are legitimate things. So it's not my taste. I don't love it. But what I love is that at this stage of the game on that show, they all have to learn to do everything else. So you've got kids that only know how to get started by twerking and whatever some of those other words are, I don't remember. But now they've got to be looking very professional. They have to be able to do contemporary and even just gorgeous flowing dance movements with each other, and it becomes a gorgeous thing. Well, how do they do that? How do they do that? Well, they have some gift that they can embody the music. And I would say that that's a beautiful illustration of how we also are invited in this great dance of life to embody all that is a part of it, to find our place, to attune to it, or to find our vibration in it, or whatever, however you want to word it, so that we can move in step with it and not be moving against it. So, boy, can you sense the difference now in the way that we would be less confused if we could just find that feel of the music? And maybe we do have to learn a new dance step every now and then, but there are ways to do it. So when I am in balance in my own life, when I am not confused, when I am focusing on being clear, that there can be obstacles that come on my path. There can be conditions or situations that I'm not really pleased I have to deal with, but I will be equipped to grow around or through or in spite of the obstacle. And what happens? It always makes us a little better for it in the long run. So I want to give you an example. I thought long and hard about this. Will you play with me? You need your hands empty. So I was thinking about it, and I thought about, isn't it funny that we say, oh, I caught a cold? Or how did you catch that cold? And we have this subtle belief that suggests you can catch a disease. We even know, you don't even raise your hand, you even know what you're most afraid of, catching. Right? And then I thought, well, if you can catch a disease, if we believe we can catch a disease, then we have to look at what that means to catch something. If I'm going to catch this ball, Shannon's going to catch this ball in a minute. Are you open? Yeah, I know. I'm on the other end of that. You're going to toss it back to me, and I am not an athlete, so we'll see. We'll just see where it goes. But you're going to get the idea of it. In order to catch anything, but I'm going to use this ball as an illustration, you have to be conscious of it. You have to be open to it. You have to get warmed up a little, right? Actually, that's really good. You have to get warmed up for it. And you're going to focus on catching the ball. Okay, so you ready? Let's just try. I'm going to just do a little underhand. Let's see what happens. All right, good. Well done. How did she do that? She kept her eye on the ball. She got her hand, she got her body ready. She loosened up. She stood up because she knew it would be easier than sitting down. She put her hands in position as the ball came, and she caught the ball. Now, watch how it works in reverse for someone who doesn't work out. And let's see if I can do it. Oh, yeah, I can do it. Yeah. So, okay, so we can. I'm not done. Don't sit down. So you catch. When you catch, you are participating, whether you are conscious of it or not. You know, I always think of those cop shows where they want to frame somebody for something somebody didn't do, so they take the gun. It's usually a bad cop. And they take the gun and they go, oh, here, catch this. And then it suddenly, and the person goes, oh, and now their fingerprints are on it, right? But you have participated. Whether you have participated willingly or not, if you catch anything, you have to play. All right, so I want to do it one more time, and I want you to throw it to me, and I want you to watch this. Good, not catch. So if I change my mind, thank you, you may be seated, I can get out of the way. I can turn my back on it. What happens when the ball comes? It just rolled off the stage, so you don't have to worry about me tripping on it now. Isn't that handy? or she could, if I gave it back to her, I could say, fool me, and throw it at me when I'm not expecting it, and it would just hit me, right? And there might be a little sting in it, because sometimes that's what happens with a curveball of life. There's a little sting in it, but I am still in choice as to what I want to do with that. Do I get mad because I got a little sting, I got a little hurt, I wasn't expecting the throw? Or can I wash it off? Can I shake it off and move on and continue on my way? So if you're going to catch something, you got to be playing in it. It is not something that that you are a victim to. If you're going to catch it, you have to be playing in it. Now, in my own life, I will use me as an illustration because this is a fairly good one. I have this interesting mentality that I just refuse to be sick. I have this great continence in my body. I think it was because as a child I had a lot of medical issues, too many doctor visits, too much treatment, and I must have made up my mind when I was a child that that is not going to be my future. And so I consequently very rarely have an issue of being sick. And my body responds to my belief that I don't have to be sick, and I probably have a strong makeup, but why? You know, I mean, how? What came first, the chicken or the egg? But I also, because I like to be well, I make choices to support my wellness. So there's a package deal. There's a way in which we work together. Listen to these words of John Randolph Price. I just stumbled on these, and it's so fitting for that little demonstration we just did. He says, you don't get health from what you eat or from what you don't eat. And you don't get sick from something out there. It is all consciousness, and your body reflects what you are thinking and feeling. You know, I say if you have chosen a certain, let's say, a very specific eating path, then you must honor that. If that is your choice, you have opened yourself to catch that, and you intend to have rewards based on those choices. But please don't do it out of fear. You know, I think that sometimes we make certain choices about eating certain ways, or here, and I'm guilty of this, I will have opinions about what I see my loved ones eating or not eating, right? I want to tell you, for about 15 years, I used to put vegetables on my beloved's plate because I wanted him to eat vegetables. That's just sad. That's just sad. And then one day I woke up and I went, I don't want to do that anymore. He can eat what he wants to eat, and he has his own mentality around his choices, and it's none of my business. So it is not to say that you will never get sick if you get your thoughts in proper order. Remember that the disclaimer at the beginning. It is not to say that. But it is to say that as we think about this stuff and we begin to process it a little bit, we can use it to our advantage for a positive outcome. We catch disease. We catch a lot of fear. That's my big concern. We catch a lot of fear. We can catch a fear of the economy. we can catch each other's fear over the environment, what we see going on in terms of what happens to the planet. We can catch a fear of terrorism, which has been hot on everybody's minds this week again. And we can even catch some frustration over the way politicians run their, and leaders of countries, how they make choices and how they want to do that. Or we can just catch our breath and choose again. Choose again in how we want to interpret what we think we're seeing. We can refuse to be confused if we look at the ways in which we catch our fear. We don't have to be open to receiving it, just as in the throwing of the ball. We're always participating, so we want to look at that. How can we readjust our view and maybe learn how to juggle the plates in a better way, or maybe that we don't have to juggle the plates at all? Now, the second idea that I wanted to talk about this morning was that idea of the way we sort of sell out our physical life in order to be more spiritual. And I just want to say, poppycosh, don't do that. Don't sell out this gorgeous, beautiful, divine, miraculous body that you were given. It doesn't make you more holy to be. I love this story of how Siddhartha, how Buddha came to be. You know, he went through that aesthetic period where that looked like the path he wanted to follow, and then he got to the point where he went, well, that's not it. And then you move on, you know, you have another way. But I think that there's such beauty that we are given, as I said at the top of the message this morning, we have the ability to appreciate it. It then has to be a God-given gift. You know, what is beauty? And this morning the sunrise is happening a little later already. And the monsoon sky was so lovely when I peeked out the window. And so we have that ability to witness that, to experience that, sort of like being in the embracing the music in that way, embodying the music, as I said before. And so don't be thinking material things. You shouldn't love your material things. I say, and I can really say this because I've been, thanks a lot, Pat Wills, but I've been decluttering again. So I have this wonderful opportunity that has invited me to thin my stuff. Now, we only moved here 4 years ago, so I haven't, and I did a really good job, didn't we, honey? We did a really good job of decluttering before we moved here, but as I'm looking at my stuff now, 4 years later, I'm thinking, I still think I don't need all this. What really matters to me? What really matters to me? Now, raise your hand if you have been in a class with me where I have been treating how to do spiritual mind treatment, and if you've heard me use my illustration of the stove I don't like and how much I'd like a new stove, and I use that as my desire, raise your hand. Good, a good number of you will be happy to know I'm finally getting a new stove. It happens to come with a new house. And yeah, mixed reviews on that, yeah. So what's going on in my life is I'm moving closer to church. And I know, I'm really excited about it. And it's a wonderful, it's very exciting. It's very exciting. And we're doing the physical work of packing up and moving. Now, yesterday I had the opportunity to pull down off the top of my cabinets in that lovely space above them. You know, I have a lot of really pretty antique-y things I've collected for years and years and years. Some of them were even my mother's, and I love them very much, and so I gave them a good cleaning, you know. I cleaned them so they're all sparkly and pretty, and I loved touching them and re-feeling yet again how much they mean to me. Some of them are sentimental, you know. Some of them have, we give everything value. So I love, and I still think some of my pretty little pictures are you know, they're just pretty. They're delicate and they're beautiful and they give me great pleasure. And then I took them to the new house and put them up on where they belong now. And so I want to tell you that if it gives you pleasure to have pretty things, then you should have pretty things, right? It's okay to love your stuff. It doesn't make you less spiritual, unless, of course, you're Buddhist, then maybe it does, I don't know. But I also would say to you, if you know that you love to garden, then for heaven's sake, go plant something, right? If you love to read, you need to be reading, and you need to be enjoying life. If you like to laugh, hang out with fun people, you know what you like. So I like good food, and I like my food to be colorful and tasty, so I make sure I get that in my life. And I like good company, so I make sure I hang out with great people like all of you. And I like to get behind my beloved on the motorcycle and pretend I'm a big bad biker chick some days, and so I have fun doing that too. So here's what you need to really, the part of the message I'd really like you to embody around this is that I don't give up doing what I love to be more spiritual. Because when you do what you love, you are being very spiritual. See, it's God's grace that's given to us freely. It's the Creator's good pleasure to give us this opportunity. You know, all substance and supply and protection and direction, it all comes from the same source. And that very way that things make us happy should make us happy. So don't confuse yourself in thinking you need to live different than you do. And yes, Pat Wells, it's good to thin out your clutter even every few years. Thank you for the great book you loaned me. Yes, yes, yes. So one of the great gifts of this teaching is that we learn how to rise above confusion, just in the same way the pilot of a plane would rise above a storm into clearer skies. And what do we know about rising above the storm or rising in consciousness? You always are given a broader view where you can see there are greater possibilities. And so I have a three-step conclusion that will be very easy for you to take. And Chris Lockman is going to make sure it's not only on Facebook. Would you add it to the weekly message next week? And so you will have it. You will have a number of ways to access this if you don't catch it well now. And number one, I already gave it away. It's breathe. Number one is breathe. Whenever you feel a little dizzy, a little off center, a little confused, breathe. And here's what I say. Breathe in. And when you breathe in, say, God is. And when you breathe out, I am. God is, I am. And with your feet planted on the ground, if I stand up to do this and plant my feet on the ground, then there's a great unifying, anchoring effect of that, of those few words. Just breathe. Breathe in, God is. Breathe out, I am. And when you stand with your feet planted on the earth, you're not going to fly all over the universe. So you're going to be a lot less confused. You're going to be a lot clearer about where you are, and who you are. These are the things that add to that clarity and lessen that confusion. Number two, it just piggybacks right onto number one, and that is to remember or acknowledge or just know that right where I am, God is. Right where I am, no matter where you are, no matter what you're going through, no matter what the situation is, right there is God. God is never confused. So you're going to breathe. You're going to remember that right where you are, God is. And then finally, and this is the dessert. Ooh, this is the sweet part. Just remember that love is always the answer. If you put those three ideas together and you just keep it somewhere, even write it on a sheet where you can look at it while you're in the car, anytime you feel a little sideways in anything, those three ideas will get you grounded, will remove that confusion, and get you right back in that divine clarity, in the rhythm of the glorious dance of life that is your life. Let us anchor these words in prayer. And so I would invite you to just get comfortable right where you're seated. And just feel the love of God right at the core of your very own being. Let us become aware that there is a presence and a power in this universe. And it is magnificent. It is greater than we are. It is a force for good. And we can find our pattern in that perfection. And we can move in step with the divine. Right here, right now, in this very room, in this very sacred space, and at the core of each individual soul that sits in a chair or listens to the sound of my voice right now, right there, is Spirit itself, the infinite intelligence of all of life, the Creator of all things. It is that presence of love, and we know that love is indeed the most powerful force in the universe. So I feel that love. I catch that music, that divine rhythm, and we become one with it, so that every movement, the thought patterns of our individual minds begin to move in perfect sync with the divine. And we open ourselves to be aware of the good on this planet, on the pretty things in our life that bring us joy and pleasure, and realize that that joy is a symbol of a God-given gift of being able to appreciate and love and be grateful for beauty and peace and harmony, and that glorious way that all things fit together, one connected to the next in the very same way that we as a part of humanity are connected to each other. And so I speak a word of blessing on this spiritual community, that we are able to catch all that good, that we become vessels to receive the gifts of God into our own lives, that this center is blessed in every way, physically, materially, and by the relationships and the love of the people that come here to volunteer and to learn and to share their gifts. I know that the substance that we need in terms of satisfying our financial commitments comes easily to us because we are open to that, because we refuse to be confused, because we know and accept that every good gift comes from one source. And as we resonate in that truth, we open ourselves to lead a life that is unlimited in all ways. For we know that Spirit is our inexhaustible source of all things. And so I speak a word of blessing on all relationships, that the presence of love is magnified in every way, and wherever there is a call for healing or reparation, that essence of God itself is the healing, the movement, the revealing of a greater truth, and the truth is that love is right there. And so I know we just receive this love. We open ourselves to soften and have forgiving hearts. We accept all this good. We affirm that there is more good for us to see and notice and participate in our lives. And I am just so grateful. I am so grateful. And so I just say thank you, God. Thank you, Spirit. Thank you, life, for this glorious dance, for the revealing of the dance steps that help us to balance the plates so that we have that even, stable, beautiful, and clear way to walk through each and every day. And in that spirit of deep, deep gratitude, I simply release this prayer. I allow it to be, and together we say, and so it is. Amen.